Blog Talk Radio.
I am the nation. I was born on July 4th, 1776, and the Declaration of Independence is my birth certificate. The bloodlines of the world run in my veins because I offered freedom to the oppressed. I am many things and many people. I am the nation. I am 200 million living souls and the ghost of millions who have lived and died for me. I am Nathan Hale and Paul Revere. I stood at Lexington and fired the shot heard round the world. I'm Washington, Jefferson, Patrick Henry. I'm John Paul Jones, the Green Mountain Boys, and Davy Crockett. I'm Lee and Abe Lincoln. I remember the Alamo, the Maine, and Pearl Harbor. When freedom called, I answered and stayed until it was over there. I left my heroic dead in Flanders fields and in the steaming jungles of Vietnam. I am the Brooklyn Bridge, the wheatlands of Kansas, and the granite hills of Vermont. I am the coal fields of the Virginias and Pennsylvania, the fertile lands of the West, the Golden Gate and Grand Canyon. I sprawl from the Atlantic to the Pacific. 3 million square miles. I'm more than 3 million farms. I'm forest, field, mountain, and desert. I'm quiet villages, and I'm cities that never sleep. You can look at me and see Ben Franklin walking down the streets of Philadelphia. I'm Babe Ruth in the World Series. I'm 130,000 schools and colleges and 326,000 churches where my people worship God as they please. I'm a ballot dropped in a box. I am an editorial in a newspaper. And I'm a letter to a congressman. I'm Thomas Edison, Albert Einstein. I'm Horace Greeley, Will Rogers, and the Wright brothers. I'm George Washington Carver, Daniel Webster, and Jonas Salk. I'm Walt Whitman, Thomas Paine, Tom Sawyer, and Walt Disney. Yes, I am the nation, and these are the things that I am. I was conceived in freedom, and God willing, in freedom I'll spend the rest of my days. May I possess always the integrity, the courage, and the strength to keep myself unshackled, to remain a citadel of freedom and a beacon of hope to the entire world. I am the nation.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Patriot Education. I'm your hostess, Terry Rowland, and I'd like to let you all know that we're here tonight through the good offices of www.patriotfamilies.com. We are the nation in very truth. Every single one of us, we the people, are the source of power for our government, and we cannot allow ourselves to forget it. We must always remember that Jefferson had it right, that governments derive their power from the consent of the governed, and it is our consent, or the withholding of that consent, that will bring our nation back to the pinnacle of freedom it has always been in the past. Tonight's topic, ladies and gentlemen, comes from a small gift I was given by a student I worked with as a one-on-one aide. It's a little desk ornament, and it has a little motto on it. The motto is, "To teach is to touch a life forever." That is incontrovertibly true, ladies and gentlemen, because when you teach someone something, you have given them something that is theirs as long as they live. You have touched their life. You have made a small dent, a tiny little scratch, a minuscule mark, but you have touched their life. Looks like I have somebody on the line tonight. Let's see who's calling in. Hello.
I'm just calling in to listen.
All right, sir. Feel free.
Bill.
I thought I recognized your voice, Bill. I'm glad you're here.
Yeah, my volunteer service is out, and I can't get on the internet, so I called in.
Oh, I'm glad you did, hon. Feel free to jump right in anytime you want.
Thank you.
You're more than welcome. We have our friend Bill Strong on the line, ladies and gentlemen. He and Hollis Buchanan host their own show every Tuesday night, Patriot Family Chat, and I'm putting in a big plug for them. because they are two great Americans, very, very, very great Americans in my mind, because they believe that leaving it up to somebody else is not the way to make things positive. As a matter of fact, leaving it up to somebody else is the way to make it about as negative as you can get it. Back to our topic tonight. As a teacher, I know that I wield a tremendous amount of power. I have the ability to give what I know to someone else. And that ability has to be used with care and integrity. And I'm not talking about just the academic skills that I share with my students. I'm talking about the personal behavior that I have to model for them. Because I don't just teach reading, writing, and arithmetic, although that is the purpose of a public education. I teach by the way I interact with my students. I teach by being what I would like to see them become, an educated person who cares about her country, her fellow human beings, and knowledge for its own sake. This is very powerful. I know so many wonderful teachers who understand the power that they wield and wield it with great care and great compassion and great love, and quite often with great passion as well. They care deeply about giving the children in their classrooms the tools they will need to learn their entire life long. But I and the other teachers that I work with are being bound and gagged by our federal government. I received an email from my friend Yolanda that was forwarded from the Greater New Orleans Tea Party about the attempt on the part of the federal government through other agencies not directly connected with the Department of Education to impose a national core curriculum on all public schools nationwide. Now, I know there are people out there who are going to say, well, we need national standards. We need some kind of way to measure what the kids know. What's the matter with that? Well, the problem with that, ladies and gentlemen, is nobody really knows what's in this core curriculum over and above the fact that you're supposed to learn to read, write, cipher, and have a big grasp of your own history. If this core curriculum is including some of the things they have been forcing kindergarten children to learn about oral sex, I think we need to call a halt to the whole idea of any national curriculum that will be crammed down the throats of our local schools. Many of the teachers that I work with are not only passionate about their profession, they are also very passionate about their spiritual lives and their beliefs. They do not impose their beliefs on their students, but they do everything they can to live their beliefs in the most positive way. They know, as I do, that the best missionary for any belief system is a good person who isn't preaching, who is merely being good. But there are some things that are possibly going to be forced to indoctrinate their children with that go against everything they believe in. It is akin to the current situation with the Obamacare and its mandate that everybody has to provide insurance that covers birth control for all of their employees, whether or not you are a Catholic church employing people or not. Right now, the Catholic Church is standing up for what is right, religious freedom. It is saying, no, you cannot force us to provide something that our belief system teaches us is wrong and against the will of God. This was never a part of what our founding fathers desired for us in any way. Neither was a core curriculum that thought it was appropriate to teach five-year-olds about the pleasures of oral sex. There is absolutely nothing in our Constitution that gives the federal government any power over the education of our children. Absolutely nothing. The way they are slipping in this core curriculum is through other agencies and private groups funded by people like Bill Gates and undoubtedly George Soros that will put together a core curriculum and recommend it to the states. And then, of course, the agencies that vet the schools to decide whether or not they should be accredited according to the federal guidelines will undoubtedly recommend this core curriculum so that they can be sure that we are abiding by the federal guidelines. The Department of Education was created by Jimmy Carter in the 1970s. Its charter and the law that put it into place states quite clearly that it has no power at all to oversee, interfere with, mandate, instruct, adjust, change, or require any curriculum, textbook, material, anything at all that is taught to children in public school. That is why this attempt to impose the progressives' idea of what a well-educated clone should be is coming through other entities and not directly through the Department of Education. And that means with this core curriculum and the ideas behind it, when we touch those lives forever, we are, in essence, killing our country and everything it stands for. Our nation was founded on the rights of the individual, not on the integrity of the group. Our current educational system is all about the integrity of the group. It penalizes, demonizes, and vilifies individual excellence as a horrible, competitive act that makes people feel bad if they aren't number one. This is not, ladies and gentlemen, in any way even possible for our founding fathers to have understood. Their entire ethos was about the principle that man can govern himself, not that man is too stupid, too evil, and too vile to be able to make a good government, so he needs an overreaching authority, a philosopher king, to squash him into his paper-like role. Our public education system was originally intended, in the minds of our founders, to be an opportunity for children to get the academic tools they needed to continue to learn throughout their lives. That our founders got. Many of them got it because they came from wealthy families who could afford to send them to school or hire private tutors and governesses. Many of them got it in dame schools where the village paid 10 cents for each child to be taught how to read. And some of them got it on their own, like Benjamin Franklin, Abraham Lincoln, and many others of the men and women who made this country what it is. People like, Sojourner Truth, and a lot of the freedmen who escaped slavery in the South and went to the North and became citizens, real citizens of this nation, because up there they could learn to read. It was not legal to teach a slave to read in the South, because when you teach a man to read, all of a sudden, he's going to ask, why am I a slave? And we are creating a nation of slaves, ladies and gentlemen, just as surely as evil times of the antebellum South. Because we are telling our children that they do not need to know things. That all they need is to be accepted by the group and to feel good about themselves and to be happy, obedient servants to government, which will solve all their problems and take care of them cradle to grave. This is how we are being told we must touch their lives forever. those of us who see this happening are in a situation where we have to, in essence, be, I guess you could call it, subversive. The definition of to subvert is to undermine. And in many ways, good teachers have to be able to undermine this kind of educational philosophy in order to do the job that their passion, their skill, and their children deserve. We have to try, even though we are bound and gagged by the federal government, to get across to our kids that knowledge is of value, that thinking may hurt your brain, as Rod says, because the government will do it for you because it's too hard for you. We have to teach them that thinking and reasoning and understanding and learning are goods. They are positive things. They are of value. They are not easy. They are not magic. They don't happen while you just sit there plugged into the computer. They happen when you exercise your mental muscles. Our kids understand exercising their physical muscles. We have them exercising those all the time. We put them in Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts and gymnastics and swimming and Little League and football and basketball and track and practically every other physical activity we can think of, because God knows we don't want them to be obese now. We want them to have nice, slim, well-toned bodies and totally non-functional brains. We are creating a race of slave labor, and the slave masters will be the progressives and the government they create. They believe they can do this, ladies and gentlemen, because they have a totally incorrect understanding of what makes a human being human. To progressives, human beings are mechanical objects. They are predictable, programmable, repairable, just like a washing machine or a car. They are educable in the sense that we can, using behavioral psychology and peer pressure and societal pressures, carrots and sticks, make them do what we want them to do if we just give them enough bread and circuses. And that once we've created enough laws so that no one has any choice about anything, all of those mechanical people will just sit down quietly and wait to be told what to do. Well, they're wrong. They would like to believe that this can happen, but it won't. Unfortunately, in their rush to create this mechanistic utopia, they are going to put all of us through an incredibly difficult time. We are going to have to accept the fact that we can no longer trust the institutions we have relied upon. We cannot trust our president, who claims to be a constitutional scholar and yet invokes executive privilege to cover his attorney general's misfeasance and malfeasance in office. We cannot trust the Environmental Protection Agency, which supposedly was to keep our waters clean, our air pure. They require refiners to produce 8.6 gallons of a biofuel that doesn't exist and fine them when they can't do it. We cannot trust our public education system and the Department of Education, because that public education system is not teaching our children to be individuals who think and reason and work hard and put forth effort for what they want. It is teaching them to be complacent, self-esteem-filled, lazy pieces of bucolic byproduct, standing in line, waiting to be shoveled up into the crate and hauled off to fertilize the progressive garden. We cannot blind ourselves to the fact that We are government. We cannot hand over our power to untrustworthy people. We have been doing it for over 40 years, ladies and gentlemen. We have been giving up our power because we have been apathetic, we have been lazy, we have been ostriches, we have wanted to trust. We have wanted to believe that we had statesmen representing us when what we actually had were politicians. We wanted to believe that our teachers in our schools were doing the best they could to make our children able to compete in a difficult world. We wanted to believe that our children would be safe as well as educated in our schools. And we wanted to believe that they were going to be taught how to interact with one another in positive ways and not insult to the point of tears an elderly lady whose function was to keep order on a school bus, or decide to plan an attack on Facebook and jump on another student at a water fountain, or blow up a school because they were bullied too much. We wanted to believe in the things that our founding fathers told us this nation could be. But because we became apathetic, and because we looked more towards things than what was on the inside of it, we allowed ourselves to put aside the most important gift we have ever been given, freedom, in favor of comfort and ease. We gave up our parental rights and turned over our children to a school system that we expect to be mother, father, minister, psychologist, counselor, athletic director, musical teacher, art teacher, self-esteem builder, babysitter, behavioral counselor, etc. We basically washed our hands of our kids and handed them over to government as if they were nothing more than the slaves that progressives want to make them. We sold our kids, ladies and gentlemen. We sold them to government in exchange for ease and the lack of responsibility. We sold them because we wanted two jobs so we could have the bigger two cars and the better large screen TV and the 16 televisions, one for every room and two in each bathroom, and the landscape on and the big house and all of the other trappings of wealth. And we believed, because we wanted to believe, that we could have all of those things and expected to pay for them. And many people out there still continue to believe. I heard something today that illustrated to me how incredibly stupid progressives believe the American people are. I heard the House Minority Leader, Nancy Pelosi, give a long and incoherent rationale as to why the Attorney General has been grilled by Congress over the fast and furious gun running issue. In her fevered progressive brain, the Republican Party, which now has a majority in Congress, is doing this because they are intending to cheat in the presidential election coming up, and they know that Saint Eric Holder will stop them. So they have manufactured this in order to make sure that Eric Holder won't be around to prevent them from stealing the election. And the progressives call the conservatives conspiracy theorists? Yeah. Just exactly. This person, and I'm being very polite because I could think of several other words for this individual, and I am not saying them. has so much contempt for the intelligence and knowledge of the American people that she can stand up and say things like this and calmly actually expect to be believed and praised for it. She bases this on the fact that for 40 years we've been teaching our kids to be stupid. They elected what we have now. And I don't know any better illustration of stupidity than that. They have been so touched by having their self-esteem stroked and so dumbed down by the control that the special education departments of every school in the country have over the curriculum and the behavior and the classrooms. They're just standing there, believing this garbage, because having to actually think about it would be too hard. Well, you know, politics is boring. I don't want to learn about government. Oh, yeah, that's a direct quote from a seventh grader I had in my happy little jail during this last school year. Why do I have to learn about that? Why do I have to learn fractions? They're boring. Why do I have to learn about government? That's boring. I don't like the government. Why do I have to learn about it? Well, if you don't like it, you better learn about it or you can't change it. This is what our teachers are being made to do, ladies and gentlemen. And it's why so many young college graduates with teaching degrees don't last more than 5 years in the profession. It's not because they aren't good. It's not because they aren't dedicated. It's not because they don't want to teach. It's because they don't want to teach the crap that they're being told they have to. And they don't want to be in a classroom with 25 children who think that they're right and their privilege is an A simply because they're there and they're breathing most of the time. We can change this, ladies and gentlemen. We have to change it. And we are the only ones who can. Because the teachers, bless their hearts, they are not all in the rubber rooms. Not all of them are happily running around at the skirts of the NEA and the other teachers' unions. They're not standing in line waiting to lick the feet of the union bosses. Believe me, they're not. In many states, the only reason they're in a union is because they have to join it or they don't get employed. Look at the drop in union membership after the recall didn't work against Governor Walker in Wisconsin. God, I live in a right-to-work state. I do not have to be a union clone in order to do a job. More and more states in this nation are realizing that one of the reasons the economy is in as bad shape as it is because of union greed. I don't mean rank and file. I do not mean the rank and file. I mean the bosses who are so in love with the power to elect and get rid of politicians. Power corrupts, ladies and gentlemen, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. When public employees unionize, you create an oxymoronic situation. Because the very people who allocate the money to pay them owe them for the power to do so. This is utterly ridiculous. Unions, craft unions and shop unions, don't have this oxymoronic situation. When they were conceived and put into place, the union movement was absolutely necessary because workers were being exploited. Every once in a while, you know, twice a day, a stopped clock is right. And the proletariat was oppressing the working man. It's not the only time Marx ever hit a nail on the head. because there was no authority or no power part of the average working stiff to try to improve conditions that were literally life-threatening. The union movement had a tremendous effect on making it possible for people to work in a safe environment and to learn and progress in their jobs and not to die in them. It was a needed thing. It used the power of the strike to basically force management to say, wait a minute, if I don't have the warm bodies to make this stuff, I'm not going to be able to sell it, and my stockholders are going to dump me. And it was an effective tool, and it was needed. But when the federal government got involved with the National Labor Relations Board and its predilection for the employer is always wrong, and the progressives in the federal government took over the Democratic Party, and believe me, my mother would be horrified. She was a lifelong Democrat, but she was not an Obama Democrat. She was not a Pelosi Democrat, and she certainly wasn't a Harry Democrat. She's a Democrat who believed the man who worked in the factory should be able to buy what the factory produced. And believe me, Henry Ford thought the same thing. And he wasn't a Democrat. But the pervasiveness of this kind of corruption and corrupt power brokering is making itself felt because we are not educating our children to ask questions. We are not educating them to think. We are not educating them to be individuals. We are not reminding them of Thoreau's words. If a man does not keep pace with his companions, it may be that he hears a different drummer. Let him march to the music that he hears, however measured or far away. My husband had taken on the wall of our office in the he put it there because of my husband. Because God love him, he marches to his own drummer, and that's why I love him so much. And she knew that you cannot treat children as if they were dominoes in a box and repaint their spots so they fit into the game. She tried with him, but he taught her, ain't gonna work. And she wasn't too old to learn. She figured it out. You cannot create an educated person as a teacher if you are told that you must individualize the curriculum to every child's learning pace, skill level, weaknesses and strengths, and still meet objective standards based on chronology, based on grade level. And you certainly cannot do this when you are dealing with children who come from a wide variety of spiritual, economic, ethnic, societal backgrounds. You cannot create lifelong learners by telling them that they are all stupid and they can't learn without government help. You cannot create responsible citizens if you tell them they get an A for spelling cat PLW because the W really looks pretty. You cannot create men and women who can govern themselves as individuals and as a nation if you teach them that the only thing that matters is that they feel good about themselves. The first time they hit a barrier, the first time they stumble and fall, the first time something doesn't go their way, they're going to sit down on the ground and bawl their eyes out and wait for somebody to pick them up and carry them. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is not America. Our nation has never sat on the ground and waited for somebody to carry us. As a matter of fact, we've gone and carried everybody else. There was a quotation I saw in an email the other day when I was one of the socialist presidents of France, I forget exactly which one right now, mentioned something about all Americans should leave France. And one of our military leaders said, does that include all the dead ones from Normandy and Alsace-Lorraine and every other town in France where Americans came to fight a vicious, horrible enemy that had swallowed their country whole? No, we don't sit down on the ground and cry till somebody rescues us. We go stick our hand in the fire and try to pull everybody else's chestnuts out. But we can't continue to be that. And I'm not talking about world policemen. I'm talking about world help. We cannot do that. We cannot be the one that everyone relies on if we tell our kids that they're supposed to sit down and cry until government fixes it for them. Because what do we get in government? Progressives forget that they are among those stupid, evil, nasty little creatures that they're so sure can't make any choices for themselves. They are convinced that they have evolved closer to godhood than we have. Well, believe me, if that's godhood, I don't want any. I think I'll start practicing atheism, because that has absolutely no relation to any god that I would worship. I do not see godhood as creating cookie-cutter people out of tin and then lining them up to bow and worship me. And that is what progressive godhood is all about. If we are to truly touch the lives of the children we teach, both in the classroom and in the home, we have to touch with care and integrity and truth and gentleness and with strength. Because sometimes the touch has to be a swat on the backside. Whether your child runs in the street in front of an oncoming truck and you leap out and save it, your first impulse is to swat it in the mud so it knows not to do that anymore. Maybe the progressives came along during Dr. Spock's happy little don't always say no that got interpreted as never say no. And maybe they could have used a couple of those good swats to understand that, guess what? Running in front of a truck is not a wise idea. And it's not a wise idea to assume that everybody else is going to run in front of a truck just because you tell them that's what they should do. If we truly are to have that happy little communist ideal that Linda is talking about in the chat room, the social justice theory, social justice doesn't come from turning us all into robots. Social justice doesn't come from depriving everybody except the progressive elite of everything except the bare necessities of life. Social justice doesn't come from the imposition of regulations and laws and strictures and indoctrination. Social justice comes on an individual basis. It is individual human beings who need to treat one another justly and honestly. And all the laws and regulations in the world are not going to make someone who doesn't believe this believe it and act upon it. Those who don't believe that their responsibility is to not only care for themselves, but to offer a helping hand to others if needed, are not going to be made to believe that by taking away all of their property and throwing them into government housing and feeding them with a loaf of bread, a bottle of milk, and some green vegetables every day so that everybody has exactly the same breakfast, dinner, and supper No, the ones who don't understand and believe that a good person gives help when it's needed. They're going to sneak in and steal your bottle of milk and your loaf of bread and your green vegetables, and they'll have double and you won't have any. And they're going to go tell the commissar that you gave it to them because you were hoarding it and you had extra. You cannot legislate morality, ladies and gentlemen, no matter how hard you try. You can legislate to attempt to reduce the risks of amorality or immorality, but you cannot make either of them disappear. Not unless you gather every human being on earth and lobotomize them. Now, I don't really like that idea, and I really don't want to have it happen to me or anybody I know personally. I can think of a couple of people in government who would benefit from the operation, but because I'm a nice woman, I wouldn't do it to them myself. That's just one of my little fantasies. But I believe that the American people can change things and stop the headlong rush over the cliff that we're all seeing right now. And the reason I believe it is because my friends are here in this chat room, here on Blog Talk Radio, listening to me talk about it. And there are folks out there in the Ethernet listening to me express my views. And nobody's breaking down my front door or hitting me in the face with a gun barrel or coming in and putting handcuffs on me because I expressed my opinion. It's because that freedom, that right, and that responsibility is still ours, ladies and gentlemen. We can and will and do speak up and speak out. We go to town council meetings and county board of supervisor meetings, like my friend Linda from California. And we fight things like Agenda 21, which wants to redistribute all the property in the world according to the incredible wisdom and brilliance of the United Nations. And there's an oxymoron if I ever heard one. We talk to one another. We share what we believe. We vote. We try to urge others to go out and vote. Not necessarily vote the way we want them to, but vote. When you've got skin in the game, it matters who is the quarterback. When you don't vote, you have no right to complain. I had a friend years ago who was proud of the fact that he'd never voted in his life. My friendship with him cooled a great deal when I heard that. Because someone who is proud of ducking responsibility is probably not going to be a reliable friend. Someone who thinks that not voting is something to be proud of is probably not going to be able to govern himself as an individual, let alone govern this country with the rest of us. Friends Linda and Kira are talking about the bus monitor, who's the YouTube video of the older lady who was bullied and insulted and just treated like dirt by a bunch of middle schoolers. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's the age group I work with. Not one of them has ever tried that with me. If they did, there would be instantaneous consequence. I have had a situation where one of my students used disgusting gutter profanity to me. He was immediately sent out of class to the main office. His parents were called to come and get him now. And he was put in out-of-school suspension for a week. Personally, the old method of washing one's mouth out with soap would have been a good idea. But then again, he might be allergic to it. Or it might damage his poor little delicate gums or something. You know, it might make him sick at his tum-tum. No, I didn't wash his mouth out with soap. I did use the situation, the power chain of command, to make sure the consequences were immediate and as uncomfortable as possible given the guidelines to work on. Unfortunately, because our progressive Department of Education says that our job in the public schools is to create a tender, compassionate, loving environment for all children, and that there is no bad behavior, only communication we don't understand. The charming young gentleman was back in school in a week for a couple of days until he did the same thing to another teacher. The presence of students like that in our public schools is not a new or outre or totally amazing anomaly kind of a thing. There have always been kids who have foul mouths and who have absolutely no ability to understand that other people are just that, people. And that, no, you can't just say whatever you want to somebody with no repercussions. There have always been people like that. But in the distant days of the past, prior to the Department of Education, people like that got kicked out of school permanently. Reward bad behavior is the worst possible thing we can do. I hope my sound is back on, ladies and gentlemen. As my friends in the chat room told me that we had lost our sound, and it could have been my microphone. I've got somebody calling in, and hang on a second, let's see who's on the line here. I also have a cat walking on my keyboard. Hello.
Hi, Carrie, this is Kyra.
Hi, Kyra. So glad to talk to you, dear. How are you this evening?
Doing okay. But, yeah, I lost the computer sound, then I lost the phone. Well, when I called in, there was no sound until, I guess, something got switched, and then all of a sudden I got miraculous sound between the phone and the computer, so you're back.
Yes, ma'am. I think it was partly the fact that my cat was jumping on my lap and he hit my microphone button. Yes, the big black tomcat, Tiptoe is his name, is madly interested in having mother pet him, of course, in the middle of a radio show, but he's already educated, so he doesn't listen to the show. What have you something that you want to contribute to the family tonight?
No, I'm just listening. I'm listening. I've been typing in the chat room. I think I'm going to kind of quiet down a little bit because I've sparked enough firefight today between Facebook and...
I understand. And I've been keeping up with what's going on in the chat room. As you know, Kyra, all of us at Patriot Families believe pretty much in the same basic fundamental truths, that freedom and responsibility go together, and that we can't have the nation that we believe in if we don't educate our children, if we don't give them not only the academic skills, but the values that they need to be able to control and rule themselves, both as individuals and as children. And as I'm looking at the chat room and trying to put a cat in the same time. But anyhow, so much of what I see on a day-to-day basis in our schools, I see really, really good teachers who are so frustrated because they understand that what their job is, and they love what they do. They love the idea of sharing what they've learned with kids and watching a light go on when somebody finally understands what a common denominator is, or they really begin to envision what Jefferson was talking about when he said that governments derive their just powers from the consent of the governed. When that light goes on, when they ask a question, they answer a question with more than yes or no, or I don't know, or that's too hard. It's the biggest thrill and the greatest high I've ever experienced. And it's that way for anybody who teaches and loves teaching. But we're being bound and gagged. I'm lucky because I work in a rural school system. I live in a fairly small county, population-wise. We have five schools. We have a high school, a middle school, a primary school, and two elementary schools. We have about 30 to 35,000 registered voters in the county. So we're a small bump on a log. But we're also small enough that we aren't having to deal with the kind of incredible idiocy that goes on in larger towns and cities, where you have people who are so used to it's somebody else's job that they can't or won't do anything on their own initiative. And their children are thinking the same way. Looks like I have another caller, a couple of other callers. Hang on and we'll see who's out there. Hello.
Cool. Hi. It's Linda.
Hey, Linda, how are you?
Fine. How's everybody?
Yeah, it looks like Ron's on the line too. Let's see if I can get him in on the number.
Cool.
Hello, Ron.
Hello.
Hey, Ron. Hello.
Yep, I'm here.
Hey, all right.
Wow.
Great. We have a regular forum tonight. Well, chip in, guys. Anything anybody wants to say, feel free.
Go ahead.
Crickets.
What, you all... I was going to say cat caught your tongue, but Tiptoe's perfectly innocent. He's just sitting here staring at me. He hasn't got anybody's tongue.
Well, I have five of them here, so a cat could get mine very easily.
Well, I've got six in my house, so I understand, Kara. Well, Ron,
that's
I haven't
so cool.
had a chance to talk to you in so long. How you doing, hon?
I'm doing wonderful, young lady. How about yourself?
Absolutely spiffy, thank you, sir.
Are you and David going to make it to the reunion?
I wish I could, but we can only afford one trip this year, and we're going to Cleveland for our family reunion in August.
Well,
but I'll be there in spirit with the Patriot family. You know that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It was a pleasure meeting you guys when we were in D.C. for the rally. But
it was.
You know, the whole thing with this school bus monitor, and it's just exemplary of the fundamental problem in our society today. And that is demonstrative of the bigger problem with the social agenda that we've had in this country for a very long time, and why the collective fascist, Marxist, socialist, whichever little ism they want to follow, just doesn't work. It's a bad plan and it's a bad idea.
Yes, sir. Always tested and it fails every time it's been tried.
You know what?
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I was talking on the show the other night, and I feel like a broken record, but I always have to go back to Plato's Republic.
Yes,
that's
sir.
Exactly
yep.
what it is.
That's exactly what it is. The anarchy by the all-powerful philosopher king, a.k.a.
Yep.
progressive God. And I said earlier on, so if that's God, I'm going to be an atheist, Ron.
Yeah.
I have absolutely no desire to worship anything that wants to create little cookie cups and have them all come down and worship. Not a child. So if that's what, that's the other aspect. As you all know, I don't espouse Christianity as a belief system, but I do espouse the idea that whatever you believe in, whatever name you use, whatever light you follow, what matters is what you do. How you treat your fellow beings. Do you understand that you get back what you give out? Do you understand that cast your bread upon the waters and it will be returned to you 100-fold is purely understandable, natural law? It happens. Whichever belief system you follow, whatever it is, it has that ethical understanding. The idea we treat someone the way we wish to be treated. It doesn't matter to me what the label is, because the person who truly tries to live that way is not going to go far wrong. They are going to do good because they wish to receive good. It's a very straightforward equation. No matter how it's wrapped or what dogma or what teaching you follow, it's an underlying truth that if we all actually did it, we would have that happy utopia, not a progressive one. The fact that everybody isn't going to do it is part of the reality of being human. But it doesn't mean that we should throw up our hands and say, oh, well, if Bush did it, so I guess I can. No, I'm sorry. It doesn't work that way. I don't throw out my belief that doing what is right instead of what is easy is how I should live, simply because everyone else doesn't share it. I'm too much of a realist, and I'm too old, and I'm too experienced to assume that all I have to do is stand on the street corner and say, I love everybody, and they're all going to come up and lick my feet and tell me I'm the Messiah. But then,
you're right.
Mary, back to that little thing on the bus, there was a reaction from one of the students' parents that was doing all of this taunting.
Mm-hmm.
And this will give you an idea of how far we've sunk. The parent said, because this was done virally on YouTube, and apparently the boy's face was out there as well,
mm-hmm.
and he said, well, people were saying, you know, how could you, you know, is there no consequences and punishment for these kids, and the parent says, oh, my son suffered enough because his face was all over YouTube.
I'll be.
Can you believe that?
That's it. Like, Ron, it's this idea that what matters is your self-esteem. And if your self-esteem is wounded, you have been punished sufficiently. Well, doggone it, my self-esteem gets wounded all the time. You know, even my cat won't listen to me. But I am not going to, you know, go and shoot the cat, for heaven's sake. It goes along with the confusion in the minds of so many of our younger generation.
Right.
That somehow or other, my freedom to express an opinion has as a corollary that everybody has to agree with me.
Right. That's crazy.
I run into this all the time with the kids. You know, well, this is my opinion. Well, I disagree. Well, you're telling me I'm wrong. You can't do that. I have a right to express my opinion. They do not understand that your opinion is your opinion, and you certainly have a right to express it, and I have a right to tell you you're full of bucolic byproduct, too, because that's my opinion. But they can't understand that. There's this assumption, and it's mainly because of what the mainstream media does, and they're rolling over and showing their bellies so Obama can scratch them. The idea that freedom of speech is to protect popular speech, and popular speech is whatever the government says it is. My God, don't they? Well, no, stupid question. It's rhetorical. I know.
Yeah, that is a rhetorical question. Of course they don't understand.
Of course they don't.
Terry, you just described most of the commentators on PMF-LSD.
I know. Believe me. I inadvertently catch some of that when we're fiddling around with the radio dial on a trip and we can't find anything to listen to. It's one of the reasons I'm glad I have a new car. I can stick my USB full of music in and I don't have to deal with them. But it amazes me, but it doesn't surprise me.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a sad commentary, yeah.
You know what burns me up is that it's so obvious to me, and maybe this is just my opinion, but it's largely based on facts and historical facts, that within the system of government that we are currently under, you have this Democrat-Republican, presumably liberal-conservative ideology, when they're all arguing over minutiae. Okay, and there's no one there that's actually talking about fixing the system. It's the system itself that's broken.
Right.
They just want to fiddle about within the system, and in reality, they're merely arguing over who gets to be king of the hill because that's where the most money is at. Whichever
Right.
part
and the power, most power,
that's where the money's at. And that's why I've supported Dr. Paul, because he's the only one that has advocated going back to the Jefferson idea of government and what I think this country was founded on,
yes,
which is small, limited government and not this fascist bureaucracy that we have currently.
Mm-hmm. And it's because we've been teaching our kids subliminally and directly for the last 40 years that everything is owed to them. That somehow or other, merely existing, gives them rights and privileges. They are entitled to whatever it is that they think they want. They also do not have any clue of the difference between a want and a need, or a right and a good. Education is not a right. It's a good.
Yes.
The rights Jefferson mentioned in the Declaration, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, doing what it is that makes you happy, are the only ones that any government can do anything to protect. It can't grant them, but government, in the eyes of the founders, wasn't intended to grant rights. It was intended to protect them.
Exactly, but see, that's how it's been turned on its head. All of these things that they believe are owed to them, they see the government as being the provider.
Exactly.
And it is so upside down and backwards. And, you know, 99% of the Republicans out there aren't arguing against ideology.
No, they're not.
They're going along with it.
Because their power comes from big government as well.
Yep.
And, you know, the Jefferson and I believe Adams both despised the idea of political parties, even though they developed around them, because they knew when you started to get a large machine of any kind, it's very difficult to stop it, especially when a committee is driving. And that's yep. pretty much what we have. We have yep. a government, a giant, huge, enormous vehicle that is being driven by 6 million different committees, none of whom want to go in the same direction at the same time. And they envisioned this. They understood this. That's why Ron Paul's idea of limited government and Jeffersonian democracy and so on, why it rings a bell for so many of us, because our founders knew that the more government, the more abuse. The more power you delegate, the less you have. They did not want the individual to be powerless in the hands of government. They had just fought a very long and horrible war to avoid that.
Yep.
Yep.
Exactly.
We have not taught our kids history, guys. We just haven't.
Right.
Well, there's all this revisionist history out there.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
I know what I was taught growing up. And
I was too.
I've done, you know, several shows on a book I just finished by Thomas DiLorenzo, The Real Lincoln. And quite honestly, it's so clear now with all the history that from the founding, even before the founding, when they were having the Constitutional Convention, you could see the sides divide up between Hamilton and mm-hmm. Jefferson.
Yep.
And those were the two competing ideologies, and Jefferson won the day. But I believe after listening to the recreation or reenactment of the Constitutional Convention that Jefferson didn't win the day. Hamilton, halfway through the proceedings, I think it dawned on him that he could acquiesce, and the mm-hmm. system that they were going to put in place was sufficient to supply his ideology in the end. That
right.
they would win out. And he was correct, because they have. It took
mm-hmm.
Lincoln to absolutely eviscerate the law and declare mm-hmm. war on his own people,
mm-hmm.
not just in the South, but also in the North,
mm-hmm.
to bring that system to fruition. But from 1789 until 1860, the Jeffersonian ideology was under constant attack from members
mm-hmm.
all over the Whig Party, what became the Whig Party,
mm-hmm.
and then later became the Democratic Republicans. And we still have that same fascist system today, what, you know, Hamilton called British mercantilism, which is
yeah.
nothing short of fascism.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's the idea that government should regulate the industry of the people, that people as entities, either entrepreneurial entities in the material world of economics or as spiritual or political entities, have to be guided by somebody. Because if they aren't, they're going to go off in directions we don't want them to go. The assumption and the underlying assumption that you can legislate people into being moral and upright citizens. If you eliminate all their choices, then they can't make a bad one. That's the progressive's contribution. And that comes from the happy little behavioral psychologist.
Yep.
Oh, God, I hate behaviorism. But
well, psychology has played a huge role in it to me is right up there with voodoo.
Yeah.
When they gave psychiatrists the ability to write prescriptions and have clinical diagnosis of mental disorders, it was game
mm-hmm.
set and match.
That's
yep.
it. Yep. Pretty much
the same.
It's the human tendency to excuse. The human desire to blame anybody but yourself for your own stupid mistakes.
Yep.
And we all do it. The progressives are really, really good at using that. They understand how to manipulate emotional perception very, very well. One of the things that used to drive me crazy when I was young, I grew up in a family with a Republican father and a Democrat mother. We had some really interesting political discussions in my house. And, of course, I leaned toward the conservative side with my dad, and my sister leaned toward the Democrat side with my mother. And my other sister was Switzerland, because she was always neutral. But my mother's Democratic Party was not the Democratic Party of today. My mother's Democratic Party was FDR's Democratic Party. And as nuts as he was and as left as he was nowhere near as far out in the stratosphere as Nancy P. and her happy little colleague in the Senate, Harry. And the charming occupant of the Oval Office that we have right now and his... oh, dear. What I can't think of a term that isn't...
derogatory?
I or an expletive? Not an expletive, but I'm thinking of his Department of Justice hound dog. Yeah.
Oh, derelict with Holder?
Yes. Uh-huh. The estimable Mr. Holder and I'll have her kind of individual that he is. Kind of like, you hold that dirty coward and I'll hit him. That's our Holder. But the Democrat ideology and the Republican ideology, the names actually do fit in the sense that a republic and a democracy are not the same thing, and a lot of people don't understand that either. True. They also, they really do not accept the fact that you can't just say, oh, well, the government will take care of it because we have a wonderful government. No, we don't. Government is not a giant angel that stands on top of the Capitol building with its wings spread saying, there, there, honey, I'll take care of you. Government is people. Government is people who choose the path to being government because it gives them power and wealth. There are very few statesmen in our government. Very, very few. Unlike the founding fathers, most of whom went broke during the Revolutionary War and who served their country because they believed it was right, not necessarily for remuneration, like George Washington, there aren't very many George Washingtons in the city named after him. Matter of fact, I don't think there are any of them. But we've forgotten the difference between a statesman and a politician. We've forgotten the difference between a democracy and a republic, and we've forgotten to learn from history. Every time I hear the chief executive come out with another magnificently articulated, prepared speech, all I can think of is Happy Adolf screaming to the populace,
yep.
Even though he's a lot less noisy about it. The aura and the desire is almost identical.
Exactly.
And it terrifies me.
I saw that coming, too. Yeah.
It terrifies
me. That's right. Me, too. I said it yesterday. He scares the hell out of me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and what Ron said, you know, and what you had said about, you know, how they perceive their power, and I think Ron said it a few weeks ago. He says, yeah, they look at us as ATM machines for their power because mm-hmm. we're funding it. Hell, I mean, Soros is a piker compared to the, you know, the vast amount of taxes these guys rape us from. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. It's pathetic. People, in their very nature, I understand it. God, I work with people all the time. People are always looking for the easy way. The easy button concept has been around a lot longer than Office Max. The easy button has always been what the potential dictator puts mm-hmm. their hand out and says, here it is. All you got to do is push this and everything is yours. I'll make sure you have this. I remember reading somewhere years ago in, something about, I think it was one of my history textbooks when I was in grade school or junior high or something, or hearing about it, that in communist schools in Soviet Russia, first and second graders got the same opening school demonstration. They were told to fold their hands and pray to God to give them candy. and they were given about 5 minutes with their eyes closed to print candy. And then they were told to open their eyes, and there wasn't any candy. Then they were told, okay, close your eyes and ask the state to give you candy. And, of course, teacher went by and dropped candy on everybody's desk. That is the way that you take immature minds and make them yours. And our educational system is doing that because what it's doing is keeping the minds of our kids at that level.
Right.
It is not allowing them to ever grow up, because grown-ups ask questions and grown-ups say no.
And you know what, Terry? The parents are allowing this.
Yes, ma'am.
That's what makes me crazy.
Yes, they are.
It's amazing.
Parents have decided, many of them, and I am not faulting people who are trying to work to make ends meet to pay a mortgage so they got a roof over their head. When I talk about the desire to have two jobs and two cars and two full-screen TVs and all that other stuff, that is not everyone, and I know this. But it's way too many parents out there. And it's part of being a parent, the idea that somehow or other, your job as a parent is to give your kids everything. And it's not.
That's insane. Yeah, that's the bad part. That's not what it's about. That's not what life's about. That's not the pursuit of happiness. You know,
no.
Things only make you happy for about an hour, you know,
uh-huh.
And then it's,
and
you know, that's it.
Things
it's
break.
It's an instant temporary gratification.
Yes, and we are all about that. We live in an instant gratification society. Technology has given us that. We no longer have to put forth the effort to put a meal on the table that even my grandmother did. You know, nobody has to haul ice and put it up on the top of my ice box. And nobody has to fire up the stove and bank it at night so you can have coals enough to start to make coffee in the morning. Nobody has to go out to the well and pump the water and heat it on the stove so you can have a bath every Saturday night. We're used to incredible comfort and ease. And I am very happy to have it. I do not want to go live in the woods. No, I do not want to have to haul my own water and chop down trees and strangle rabbits and take the skin off and cook them over an open fire. No, to me...
And you don't want to have to take the Washington Times for toilet paper either.
No, I don't. Believe me, for me, camping is a Holiday Inn without room service. I am not at all a primitive type. But neither am I so blind as to assume that all of the wonderful luxuries I have will be there eternally and they can never be taken away from me either.
Right.
I'm practical enough and smart enough and have had a life experience enough to understand I live better than any human being in the last million years has lived. But it isn't guaranteed that I always will. And this
you're
is
also,
where we...
Yeah, you're also wise enough to know that if you had to, you probably could survive. And
darn
you,
right.
You have some life skills, yeah. Not that you would, you know, rejoice in it, but at least, I mean, the kids today, oh my God, can you imagine no microwave oven?
Oh my.
They'd starve.
They'd sit down on the pavement in a broken city and cry until somebody buried them. That would be pretty much it, yeah. The idea of, there's just no concept that anything at all has to be worked for, that effort is required to do anything. The funny part is, with all of the insane... fear of our obese children, we're stuffing them into sports and running around. They understand that if they're going to be able to play football, they probably should be able to run. They figure that out because football is, quote unquote, fun. Well, it wouldn't be for me. I don't want large people to hit me around the waist and knock me to the ground. But again, I'm not a guy, so I'm fond of that sort of thing, but I understand many guys are. But they understand they have to be in condition to do particular,
right,
quote-unquote, fun thing. But it does carry over because there's no common cultural acceptance of the fact, a work ethic, the idea that what I have to be worked for is an essential part of life. We have, quote-unquote, evolved beyond that. well, we've evolved ourselves into a situation that all we need is an EMP or a solar flare strike or something like that, and we're all going to be standing around with our mouths open waiting for Mama Bird, and Mama Bird isn't flying anymore.
Exactly. Yep.
And if we don't wake up, and if we don't talk to each other and try to get others to pay attention to what's going to happen in the future, technology is a wonderful thing, and I love what it can do for me. Truly, I do. I'm sitting here depending on it to reach out to all of you, and I glory in it. It's fantastic. It's amazing. This was science fiction when I was a kid. I'm thrilled with it. But I know that it could disappear.
Right.
And I know that I won't have it if I don't work and pay my rent and my electric bill.
Exactly.
I do not expect the president to walk in my front door with a computer and a check for my electric bill. But there are a lot of people out there who do.
I know. Hopefully that there's far less now than there was in 08, but we'll see. Yeah.
I have my fingers crossed from your lips to God's ears, Linda. I certainly hope so.
I'm not holding my breath.
Well, please don't, because I
know.
Want to be alive, Ron. No, we
people
want you to stay alive.
You know, I think the key in all of this is that people don't want to be responsible for themselves. I mean, we've had this conversation before.
Mm-hmm.
And it's they find ways to rationalize why they're not responsible. They're not to blame.
Exactly.
And I think those people that don't do that, those people that are responsible for themselves, take responsibility, take the blame when it's their fault and they realize they've messed up something, those are the few people that are involved in, you know, the Patriot movement and the true Patriot movement, because there's a lot of sunshine patriots in the Tea Party.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, there are.
There's a whole bunch of them.
There are.
Well, you know, it's like a fad.
You know, this whole thing of the non-mea culpa going on with Holder and the rest of these clowns, you know, this is the most, as you talk about, that level of maturity, this is the most immature stance. I mean, it reminds me of a five-year-old who says, oh, I don't know how the house burned down. I didn't do it, you know. I mean, that's exactly what I see when I look at these people and I listen to them. It's like, oh, my God, they're like five-year-olds, spoiled at that.
Mm-hmm. Yes. As I've said, progressives never got beyond a 13-year-old mentality. It's never my fault. The dog ate my homework. He talked to me during the test. The whole bit, they can't accept the fact that they've screwed up, that they didn't study, that they didn't vet this, that they didn't investigate, that somebody else is going to take the blame from them. And everybody's going to come up and pat them on the back, give them a hug and say, gee, we're so sorry, we'll fix it for you, because their poor little self-esteem is going to be damaged if they have to admit that they made a mistake. So it's absurd, but it's the way they think.
I know, it's crazy. And you're running out of time, and thank you for taking my call, and it was great to have Kyra, and I don't know who else is on the line, Ron, everybody, and those in the chat room. So I'm going to go ahead and spin it in the other room, and thank you so much.
Thanks for calling in, Linda. It's always great to hear your voice.
Thank you.
Well, folks, we've got about 6 minutes left of tonight's show. I hate to sound like I'm being doom and gloom. I'm not. I wouldn't keep doing what I do if I believed that it was worthless. I'm not that much of a fool. I believe that it matters, and that's why I continue to do it. And as I've said before on this show, I may never know whether what I've said or what I've taught strikes a chord with a student, but I always hope that it will. And that's why I keep doing what I do, both on this show and during the school year and when I talk to people. I keep trying to live the way that I would like to see the children I teach live, to ask questions, to learn, to teach, to be willing to listen, and to recognize that we will never all think alike, and that is both our glory and our danger. You cannot make people into little tin cutouts. There will always be difference of opinion. There will always be people who disagree with you. There will always be those who don't care about anybody but themselves and their own desires. Sociopaths have existed since the beginning of time, and they will continue to exist. We cannot eliminate them. There is no magic wand, no eugenics program that can look into the heart of another individual and decide this person doesn't feel the way he should, let's kill him. We cannot do that. We are not God, and we are not becoming God. What we can do is to try to live up to the best that is in us, to try to do what is given to us to do with 100% of our passion and our integrity, to try to treat the other guy the way we wish to be treated, both in our actions and in our words. If I can get a glimmer of that across, along with fractions and constitutional history and basic physics and the understanding of Spanish or what a noun is, if I can put a little bit of myself into the academics, the best part of myself, I will have touched those lives forever with something that really matters, something that will last forever. Because part of what I do, is to model what I would like these children to become. I am not perfect, and I never will be. I have a long road to hoe before I can evolve to godhood, and I don't think I want to be quite frank. That's way more responsibility than I think I can bear. What I do have is a desire to give the things that I know to kids who are going to be electing representatives who will make the laws that govern my beloved country. And I want those children to understand that that is both a right and a responsibility, and that it is a tremendous source of power, and it must be used wisely and well if this nation is to endure. Please join us, ladies and gentlemen. Please join us every night for one of our shows here on Blog Talk Radio. Constitution Hour on Monday. Patriot Family Chat on Tuesday. Right from the Left Coast on Wednesday. Patriot Education every Thursday. Foreclosure Help on Friday. Breaking the Illusion on Saturday. And Frank is Fed Up on Sunday. And please join us on our website, www.patriotfamilies.com, where you'll meet folks who do care and do know that we are the nation. Have a great evening, everyone. Good night, and God bless.